Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kian. Today we'll discuss the article by Wan et al. Titled, Calpostatin Overexpression Impairs Post-Infarct Scar Healing in Mice by Compromising Reparative Immune Cell Recruitment and Activation. This article published online October 9th, 2015. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, Lead Author Barnabas Galen, and Content Expert Gerd Heusch. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. In this study, calpostatin overexpression was used to suppress calpain activity. In a mouse MI model, the decrease in calpain activity impaired scar formation by blunting the anti-inflammatory M2 macrophage and CD4 positive T cell functions. Barnabas, tell us why you did this study.
We planned this study in 2010 for studying long-term remodeling effects, and we did not focus initially on short-term. And only once we found dead transgenic mice at day 5 and 6 in the cages, we started to ask ourselves what happens during the first week. And then we turned back and set up a new series of experiments when we sacrificed mice at day 5 to check what's going on.
I see. This is a good case where the experimental design evolved over time compared to what it initially was. GERD, calpostatin-deficient mice also showed increased mortality post-MI. And at the same time, calpain inhibition has been suggested to be a potential therapy for preventing LV remodeling during the acute phase. Based on these new results, this indicates that there's many components of LV remodeling that are influenced by the calpain system that we maybe previously didn't appreciate. Can you discuss possible mechanisms that could be at work here?
Yes, Mary, I think you are completely right. What this study shows to me on the mechanistic perspective is the ambivalence of the function that calpain has. And I think this is just another example of how well orchestrated in terms of spatial and temporal evolution the process from immediate reperfusion to eventual repair of myocardial function is. I mean, other examples, you are an expert on that, are the metalloproteinases or reactive oxygen species that all can serve a good or a bad function. And here with calpain, it's not only the spatial and temporal evolution that counts, but also the cellular compartment that we are dealing with. What the Galen study now shows, and which is novel, at least from my perspective, and original, is that a few days later, another cellular compartment comes in, the inflammatory cells, where calpain serves a good function because calpain is needed for the T cells to convert the macrophages into the M2 type, which are essential then for repairing the infarcted area and provide stability to the developing fibrotic scar tissue there. So we are dealing with a different time scale, a different spatial evolution of the scar, and also with different cellular compartments here.
Gerd, I think you have it exactly right. The balance between all of these components that are all occurring simultaneously and sequentially are something that really need to be considered over the whole time continuum of MI remodeling. Barnabas, do you have anything to add to those comments?
The comments of Gerd were very complete. I think I just can confirm that the basic issue here is timing. I think it's really timing. It's also the extent of calpain inhibition. Should we inhibit completely or partially the activity of these enzymes? When should we do it? For how long should we do it? And in which cell type should we do it? Because in cardiac myocytes, there are several data from several groups suggesting a beneficial effect. In inflammatory cells, maybe it's detrimental at a certain time point and it might be beneficial few days later. And we don't know anything, I think, about endothelial cells and vascular smooth muscle cells and myofibroblasts, etc. So there is a lot to do in this field of calpain inhibition post-MI.
I agree with that. I want to shift directions just a little bit and talk about one of the technical aspects of this paper. In this report, Barnabas and colleagues used a permanent occlusion MI model, and my laboratory also uses that permanent occlusion model. Gerd, I think that you are one of the experts on the ischemia reperfusion model, so I think this is a good opportunity for us to have a discussion about what's good and bad about both models and whether or not, as reviewers, we should credit one model more over the other. So maybe you can just tell me a little bit about your thoughts about permanent occlusion versus ischemia reperfusion.
Thanks, Mary. I think both models, the permanent coronary occlusion and the ischemia reperfusion models, have their value. I think the permanent coronary occlusion just emphasizes one extreme of the spectrum that we see in a clinical setting. Nowadays, at least in Western societies, most patients experience some sort of therapeutic reperfusion. So ischemia reperfusion may be the more frequently seen clinical scenario. We also have to consider that many patients who do not receive therapeutic reperfusion will have spontaneous reperfusion of the thrombus in their coronary arteries. And the minority of cases really has a permanent coronary occlusion. So the permanent coronary occlusion creates a large, mostly transmural infarction, and this is one extreme of the spectrum. And this is also reflected by Barnabas' findings, because mortality by rupture of an infarct zone is a very rare thing clinically. So from my perspective, it's okay to use this model if you want to highlight a very extreme and severe form of myocardial infarction, but then the clinical relevance in terms of translation to everyday scenarios is somewhat limited.
I think those points are excellent, Gerd. I think that, like you said, having a large effect size model such as the permanent occlusion model provides is a good starting point, and that if we want to think about translational research and eventually moving things into the clinic, having an ischemia reperfusion model is something that we need to use as a bridge between permanent occlusion and then going into a human study. So those are excellent comments.
I think this model has its value once you want to look at a mechanism, and that's the strength of this particular paper that we're looking today. If you want to have a more translational model, we probably need to use larger models with ischemia reperfusion. But these are two separate issues. Mechanism comes first, and then we can translate it. So both models have their value.
The other thing that remains still true, that in Western societies, the most frequent etiology of heart failure with reduced ejection fraction is still ischemic cardiomyopathy. So we have to deal in humans still, unfortunately, with unreperfused or too late reperfused and large MIs. So it remains an issue. I'm an interventional cardiologist, and I confirm by my daily clinical practice that people call too late and people come too late. And even if they live 5 minutes from the university center. So there is still a lot, too much of necrosis going on, even in Western countries.
That's an excellent comment, Barnabas. I think that as a basic scientist, I always assume that if reperfusion is available, 100% of patients are going to receive that in a timely manner. And so it just shows us that the clinical scenario has a lot of gray in it, which is, you know, real life situation. So let's switch back to talking about the science of this study. Barnabas, what are the next steps from here?
I think that the next steps follow from what Gerd has just said. We have to find out which is the best time point to start calpain inhibition, which is the best time point maybe to stop calpain inhibition, to which extent we should exert an inhibitory effect on calpain function, and in which cell types. And we have also to check in which kind of model, reperfusion or permanent ligation, and if we check it in permanent ligation models, do we look for large or middle-sized MI, which would yield different results with different survival curves?
It seems to me that this would be the type of study that would be especially beneficial to have a computational approach component to it, where if there was some simulation aspects of the remodeling process where you could, in a simulation mode, turn on and off Calpain at different times, that might be a way to quickly run through a bunch of scenarios and then experimentally test those that had the biggest effect or the most interesting effect differences. Gerd, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, the one thing is to do it in a simulation approach in silico. The other thing in an experimental setting could be to try a cell type specific and possibly conditional overexpression, which would allow you to target single cells, cardiomyocytes versus lymphocytes versus macrophages on the one hand, and it would also possibly be a conditional switch on or off of the calpain. That would allow you to study these phenomena and just parallel that to an in silico approach.
Barnabas, on behalf of AJP Heart and the American Physiological Society, thank you for submitting your work to our journal. Gerd, thanks for discussing this article with us. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.